All right, Alexander, let's talk a little bit here about Dr. Anthony Fauci, who has become the face of handling the CV crisis in the United States. And it's really no different than the countries that I'm living in and familiar with that I'm watching the news on a nightly basis, say Greece and Cyprus, where I've also seen a lot of these scientists get on multiple channels and almost brand themselves the face of dealing with the CV crisis. And then, of course, consulting with the government and the president or the prime minister and having a massive influence on the policy actions taking place. These scientists have become kind of rock stars during this whole ordeal. And so, what we're seeing in the US, I think, is pretty common in most countries right now, where these scientists have really become daily fixtures in our news watching, and it's kind of interesting to see them become celebrities when, maybe 6 months ago we didn't know who the hell these guys were. But digging into Dr. Anthony Fauci, there is no doubt that this guy is a heavy hitter in the medical community, in the circles dominated by oligarchs, billionaires, and big-time politicians. He's got deep ties to Bill Gates. He's got deep ties to Hillary Clinton, to the Gates Foundation, to the Clinton Foundation, to Nancy Pelosi, to George Soros. What do you make of Dr. Fauci, Alexander, your first impressions? And then I'm going to read you an excerpt, which takes us a little bit deeper into what I believe are some conflicts of interest that Dr. Fauci has.
Well, I am going to analyze my, or at least give my opinions about how Miss Dr. Fauci is acting, and I'm afraid those opinions will contain, I think, some criticisms of Dr. Fauci. I have been watching Dr. Fauci, from a distance in Britain, with growing bewilderment and concern. And you mentioned rock star doctors and medical experts, of whom there are plenty around the world. We have no shortage of them here in Britain, by the way. And I am becoming increasingly worried, because I'm asking myself, what exactly is the role of these people? Are they there to provide advice to the political leaders, who are, to be very clear, the policy makers? Or are they themselves the policy makers? Now, I have to say this in relation to Dr. Fauci. He now seems to be almost continuously in the media. He's giving interviews. He's expressing his views all the time. He's saying things which at times seem to contradict things which the President of the United States, who is his boss, is saying or directing interest towards. And I don't understand how somebody who is advising the President of the United States ought to be doing that. I think, and this is my own personal view, that the role of an expert, and I should say that, in legal matters, I have been an expert. I've actually advised politicians as an expert, if you'd like to call me an expert, in the past on legal matters. I think the function of an expert is to remain in the shadows and to give advice. It's not to go around the TV studios and provide long, detailed interviews in which you are basically the sort of rock star, which is what he's becoming. And I think the danger of doing that by an expert is twofold. Firstly, on the one hand, it inevitably, as I said, creates tensions between the policy maker, who is in this case the president, and the advisor, who is in this instance Dr. Fauci. It creates opportunities for people to create problems between the expert and the president. But it also, I think, risks corrupting the expert. Because if the expert is going around and is being treated as a rock star, inevitably, all of us being human, we start to enjoy that kind of treatment. And it is inevitably at some point going to affect our judgment. Now, can I say one thing about Dr. Fauci? He may be a brilliant medical person. I'm not in any way disputing this. There's much of what he says with which I have no quarrel. But I have noticed that he doesn't seem to be offering any basic pathway out of this crisis, which is what I think millions, hundreds of millions of people are looking for. And I can't help but wonder whether one of the reasons he's not providing a pathway out of this crisis is because he is rather enjoying this extraordinary role he is currently getting, which he will not have once this crisis is overcome. Now, that may be extremely ungenerous, but we are all have our little vanities. And it seems to me that in this particular case, I can very easily see how that is being, inflated by the attention he is getting. So I think that he needs to remind himself very quickly of what his actual role is. And that role, I repeat, is to advise the President of the United States. It is the President who makes the decisions. If Dr. Fauci doesn't agree with the President's decisions, then he ceases to be the President's expert and he resigns. And it is not his job to go around criticizing the President, or even by hints, certainly not by hints and implications. That is my view.
All right, Alexander, let me take a step back before I read you an excerpt on a major conflict of interest with Fauci and what he's up to here with advising Trump with the CV crisis. I want to read a couple of quick paragraphs from the National File, which did a story entitled "The Dark Truth About Fauci and Burks, Bill Gates, and Globalist Elite." And in the article, they make a couple of claims, which I think are really interesting. The first one they say is Fauci is pushing the talking point that things will never go back to normal in our society until we have the ability to mass vaccinate people, echoing Bill Gates' assertion that mass gatherings in our culture may not come back at all before mass vaccinations. Fauci has also made his rounds on pretty much all the mainstream media channels, CNN, MSNBC, even Fox News. And he has openly contradicted President Trump, and he's contradicted President Trump in a very hostile manner. That's point number two. And point number three, Fauci has downplayed the threat of CV on January 21st in a Newsmax TV interview. And I quote, he said, "This is not a major threat for the people in the United States, and this is not something that the citizens of the United States right now should be worried about." That's a quote from Fauci. Of course, later on, he expressed how serious the virus is, but he said that weeks afterwards. My question to you before I get into the conflict of interest that we're going to explore. Much in the same way that when Trump first got into office and he was dealing with a lot of foreign policy hotspots and conflicts and trouble areas, he kind of got roped into a neocon advisory team, most notably Bolton, McMaster, Pompeo, all these guys. This is post Flynn. I see that there's a lot of parallels with what's happening here in that I feel that Trump, in the beginning of this crisis and now going forward, he's kind of been roped into having this, God, maybe you have better words, this neoliberal, globalist, institutionalist type of team. Fauci and Burks and all these people, once again, who seem to have deep ties to all the oligarchs and all the Davos crowd and all the Bilderberg crowd. I mean, it seems that Trump has once again, much in the same way that we saw his foreign policy team shape up when he first took office, we almost see a parallel here as well, in that he's dealing with a lot of people that, number one, don't have the country's best interest at heart, and number two, don't particularly like him much. President Trump, that being. What do you think of everything I've just said?
Well, I think that's spot on. Can I first of all say something? I mean, Donald Trump became president of the United States very, very inexperienced. He had never held public office before. He came in with certain very strong views, some of which, by the way, many of which I agree with. On foreign policy, I tended to agree with him very strongly. He came in with very, very strong views, but he lacked knowledge of how Washington works. And like many people who are very inexperienced, he was very overawed and by people who he saw as experts. Now, these included people who were foreign policy experts or self-appointed foreign policy experts, and he went along with them far too dangerously. You remember there was that time when he was surrounding himself with generals, McMaster and Kelly and Mattis and all the others. And then, of course, he brought in people like Bolton and Pompeo, who also claimed to be foreign policy experts. And I think he's gradually found out for himself that the advice these people are giving him is actually extremely bad, and that they undermine him at every opportunity, and that they tell each other this unbelievably condescending thing, that they are the adults in the room, and he, the President of the United States, elected in accordance with the Constitution, is a child. So I think very gradually he's come to understand that you don't trust these experts. They have their own agendas. They're working against what I, as the president, want. And very, very gradually, but I think now over the last couple of weeks and months, increasingly purposefully, you're starting to see Donald Trump finding his own way, making his own decisions, and starting to do things which go against what the bureaucracy, the foreign policy experts say. And you saw that, I think, most vividly, and I don't want to go over all this again, but you saw this very vividly back in January when he conducted back channel negotiations, cutting out his own bureaucracy, cutting out his own experts with the Iranians, and was able to calm down things then. So that's Donald Trump learning on the job, and also discovering that he shouldn't rely on foreign policy experts. I'm afraid with a medical crisis, and with even more excuse actually, the same thing has happened. And here it's not surprising, because of course we are, all of us who are not scientists and not doctors and not professionals, generally very, very much in awe of experts. And we have to a great extent, follow their guidance and advice. But I come back to this. The experts are there to advise us. Their function in any political system is to advise the person in charge. Now, look at the countries that have, in my opinion, handled this crisis, the coronavirus crisis, best. The Russians, well, Putin's been around for 21 years. He's possibly the most experienced political leader on the planet. He makes the decisions. He listens to the experts. In Germany, yes, you do have this phenomenon to some extent of the experts taking control. But Merkel is still there. And it's important to say she's a scientist herself by training. And she is also very experienced. I think Donald Trump is, by contrast with these people, learning on the job. And I think one thing he has probably noticed about Dr. Fauci by now, and that is that Dr. Fauci is not providing him with a way out of this solution, of this crisis. He is only basically saying, let's wait for the vaccine to appear. A vaccine is not going to appear for at least 18 months, perhaps even longer, at least not in usable quantities. It is not practical to keep the United States locked down for 18 months or 2 years. It can't be done. it can't be done with any advanced economy. You have to start thinking outside that. And when you start doing that, there are things you can do. You can ramp up testing. You can find out who's, how many people are asymptomatic. You can start taking steps to restrict the movements of those people who are asymptomatic carriers. You can ramp up production of protective clothing. You can come up with some of the things that we talked about yesterday on the live that you said, things which a medical expert might not think of, like apps to inform you about how you can visit your cafe safely. You can start doing all kinds of things like this and work towards those objectives. Leaving it to someone like Dr. Fauci to usurp control of policy is ultimately not the right way forward. And of course, it's happening in many countries, but the extreme case is the United States. Now, can I say something? I am worried about Dr. Fauci's conflicts of interest. He has a history of being very closely aligned with people who are opposed to Donald Trump. He has said things which to me, frankly, given his role, seem to be actively disloyal to Donald Trump. And he does have connections with the certain gentleman who founded Microsoft, who, as I have said in a recent program, I regard as a monopolist with a clear agenda of his own, which is to solve everything, every health crisis, by coming up with a vaccine, which he will ultimately control. And that seems to me to be very close to the agenda that Dr. Fauci is promoting. So I think that these issues are important. I think also Donald Trump needs to learn how to handle experts properly. He's got that sense with the foreign policy people. I think he's still not fully grasped it with the medical people and with Dr. Fauci specifically. I think he is getting there. I think he is getting there. And he needs to understand that, you know, obviously you can't wait for a vaccine indefinitely. But there are many other things you can do.
No, and there's no doubt that Dr. Fauci is getting a lot of protection from the mainstream media, specifically the CNNs, the MSNBCs, the New York Times.
They're playing him off against Trump.
Right, but,
and he's letting himself be used in that way. And that I really find very troubling.
That's on purpose. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think that's on purpose because they understand that Fauci also serves a role of perhaps being the one person that can thwart U.S. President Trump's effort to open up the country and get things moving again.
Yes.
And i.e. for them, that means the worse the U.S. does, the better chance they have of winning the election in November. That's how they rationalize it. And maybe that's how Fauci also rationalizes it because I don't think he's really in Trump's corner.
Well, he's not. Sorry to say that, but I mean, watching him, I mean, what I watched of him, he's not in Trump's corner. And he's been used to undermine the president because he's supposed to be advising the president. So what's happening is, as I said, they're setting up Fauci as this man who's tremendously sensible, who knows everything. He's the great expert. And as I said, Donald Trump is this erratic, ignorant, foolish, narcissistic bull in a china shop who wants to just do everything that will end in disaster and end in chaos. And that is exactly the narrative that Fauci is helping to construct. And that is exactly what the media is using him for. And of course, it's what the Democrats are using him for. Everything in the United States, the whole political thing, is structured around the 2020 election. And we must not lose sight of this.
Yeah, and Fauci has deep connections with Hillary Clinton and with Nancy Pelosi and with George Soros and with Bill Gates, all people who despise Trump. So I don't know how Fauci ended up to be the face and the point man of what's going on with the CB crisis. There's a tweet from WikiLeaks, Alexander, and this is from a 2013 email from Cheryl Mills, where she's referencing Fauci, and she says, "From your doctor admirer, Cheryl Mills," I guess to Hillary Clinton. It has the title on top. Dr. Fauci supports Hillary Clinton. That's a WikiLeaks email. That's from January 23rd, 2013. Dr. Fauci does not want to treat this virus. That's my feeling, because when Trump was talking about hydroxychloroquine, Fauci immediately got on the mainstream media channels and pretty much downplayed the usefulness of hydroxychloroquine and once again pushed the vaccine solution. And I find that to be really odd, because I would think the most sensible path to getting through this would be first find a way to treat it, very much like the cold or the flu, and then deal with the vaccine. Find the treatment methods first, inexpensive, quick, results-driven treatment methods, and then look at the vaccine. But Fauci seems to be hell-bent on getting that vaccine no matter what, even if it means, like you said, keeping people locked up for 2 months. So let me point out
2 years,
what
not 2 months, 2 years.
2 years, sorry, 2 years, yes. Yes, so let me point out what may actually be that conflict of interest, aside from the fact that we may be seeing a very big political play, i.e., the November elections and Fauci's connections to the people that want to remove Trump at all costs. There might be a financial play here as well, and that's, of course, connected to the Bill G Foundation. So this is from the New Eastern Outlook Journal, Alexander, and it reads like this: Gates Foundation money is backing vaccine development in every front. Inovio Pharmaceuticals of Pennsylvania received $9 million from the Gates-backed CEPI, Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations, to develop a vaccine, INO-4800, which is about to test on humans in April, a suspiciously rapid time frame. In addition, Gates Foundation just gave the company and added $5 million to develop a proprietary smart device for intradermal delivery of the new vaccine. In addition, the Gates Foundation monies via CEPI are financing development of a radical new vaccine method known as messenger RNA or mRNA. They are co-funding the Cambridge, Massachusetts biotech company Moderna Inc. to develop a vaccine against the Wuhan novel coronavirus, now called SARS-CoV-2. Moderna's other partner is the U.S. National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, INIAID, a part of the National Institute of Health, NIH. Head of NIAID is Dr. Anthony Fauci, the person at the center of the Trump administration virus emergency response. Notable about Fauci Gates' Moderna coronavirus vaccine, mRNA-1273, is that it has been rolled out in a matter of weeks, not years, and on February 24 went directly to Fauci's NIH for tests on human guinea pigs, not on mice as normal. Moderna's chief medical advisor, Tal Zaks, argued, "I don't think proving this in an animal model is on the critical path to getting this to a clinical trial." Add to this the fact that the Gates Foundation and related entities such as CEPI constitute the largest funders of the public-private entity known as the WHO, and that its current director, Tedros, last name, the first WHO director in history, not a medical doctor, worked for years on HIV with the Gates Foundation when Tedros was a government minister in Ethiopia. And we see that there is practically no area of current CV pandemic where the footprints of the omnipresent Gates are not to be found. If that is to the good of mankind or grounds to be worried, time will tell." I would also say the omnipresence of Dr. Anthony Fauci, this Moderna Incorporated, the vaccine is being, I wouldn't even say fast-tracked, it's being rocket-tracked into trials. This is dangerous stuff. And we also know via this article that Fauci has a lot of patents to his name as well, specifically on HIV drugs. There is a big financial windfall here for the company that can market a vaccine. And I say market, that's the important part. It may not have to work specifically well, but as long as you can market it and sell it.
Well, can I just say, first of all, two things. First of all, nobody who's followed our programs can have any doubt about my belief in the seriousness of this health crisis. And the second thing I want to say is that I'm absolutely someone who understands and accepts the importance and value of vaccines. But I cannot be oblivious to the fact that whoever comes up with a vaccine in this matter, in this crisis that we're in at the moment, stands to make billions. If they're able to keep this thing going until those vaccines appear 2 years from now, well, of course, they will make even more billions. They will make gazillions. And it seems to me that the priority now cannot be a vaccine, which, as I said, is probably 18 months to 2 years away before it becomes widely distributed, even with all the rocket science that you're throwing at it. It is to find some kind of way of treating this thing. And it apparently, you mentioned one drug,
hydroxychloroquine, there's vitamin C, there's zinc.
There's a lot of them. And I mean, there's also no doubt at all. And this I'm hearing from doctors, by the way. There are people are learning continuously about forms of palliative care. With every week and day that passes, medical science and experience on the front lines is learning more about how to treat people. And that's where the priority ought to be in now, not in with vaccines. And if you start working towards developing palliative care, to supporting drugs that may work, I mean, I've heard, for example, about a drug that was developed in China that's now been looked into, for example. If you can do that, well, the vaccine, when it comes along, will be useful to you. But by then, hopefully, the worst of the crisis anyway will have been overcome. And we will be no longer in lockdown because we will have means of controlling this thing. Now, what Dr. Fauci is doing, and I think it's absolutely justified to point out that he has a financial interest in these outcomes, because he clearly does, is he seems to be focusing everybody's attention on vaccines. And he's going around saying, the president comes up with the idea about this drug. Well, I don't think this is really very helpful. We've got to work for the vaccine. I mean, maybe he sincerely thinks this drug isn't going to do very much, but he can come along and say to people and give them some hope that, yes, we are looking at many other drugs. We're looking at all kinds of treatments. In a few weeks and months' time, we will be making some progress. Rather than tell them, we've got to wait for this vaccine, which many people will see as postponing the day when this thing is overcome, into 2 years, which most people can't withstand.
It's impossible.
That's impossible. Exactly. This is something I really want to say. You have to give people some idea of how this thing is going to end. And there are ways of, as I say, there are ways of doing it. One is beginning to see a clear path to that. One has to also look at, treatments. And again, there is clear path that way to doing this. Dr. Fauci, it seems to me, isn't doing that. And he's undermined, at the same time, by his undermining the president of the United States in the way that he is doing. He's doing two things. He's weakening public confidence in the president, who is the decision maker. And inevitably, he is weakening the president's confidence in him, in Dr. Fauci, which is very bad, given that Dr. Fauci is supposed to be, he's most the president's most important advisor in this issue. By the way, I think the president needs to have advice from a much broader circle of experts than just one. I'm sure he is listening, or he's receiving experts, or he's hearing experts, more broadly than just Dr. Fauci. But I'm worried about the fact that Dr. Fauci seems to be the one who's attracting all the attention.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you on that one as well. And we can get into Dr. Birx as well. Maybe that's for another video.
Well, indeed.
We're trying to remain a little more focused and a little more narrow on this video, just because of time constraints. We don't want to run this video too long. There's a tweet that was sent, Alexander, on February 1st, 2020. And the tweet says this: March 2017 at Real Donald Trump confronted Bill G on the safety of vaccines. And when he was considering a safety commission headed by Robert Kennedy Jr. to look into the ill effects of vaccines, Gates said, quote, "No, that's a dead end. That would be a bad thing. Don't do that." Now, before I say anything further, vaccines are good as long as they're safe. That's the point. And I think it takes many, many years to come up with a very safe type of vaccine. The fact that they're rushing this out so quickly is extremely worrying. The fact that Bill Gates is behind this is extremely worrying. But that tweet, Alexander, is interesting, because we also know that Robert Kennedy Jr., who has spoken vocally against what Bill is doing with his vaccine methods, is a very big supporter of the Clinton Foundation. Very big supporter. Now, Fauci, to me, seems that he's positioned himself to have the best of both worlds when dealing with these, maybe I could say, competing foundations, maybe, in much the same way that you may see competing businesses. Because like you said, there's probably not billions involved here in dealing with the CV crisis. There's hundreds of billions, trillions for the foundation and the oligarchs that can deal with the CV crisis, or pretend to deal with the CV crisis. Now, Fauci appears to have positioned himself in between the Gates Foundation and the Clinton Foundation. What do you make of that? Because there's no doubt that the Kennedy side of things and the Gates side of things are in conflict. I mean, these are competing foundations, it seems, Hillary and Bill.
Well, indeed. I mean, this is, of course, another problem, because, of course, he's now he seems to be playing off. I don't know. I'm not saying he's doing this intentionally or consciously, but he seems to be playing one off against the other, or at least trying to keep in with both. He's trying to, as we say, run with the, in England, run with the foxes and run with the hounds. He wants to be in good terms with, Mr. Bill G, and at the same time he wants to be on good terms with the others, because he's saying to himself, if I wait and hold back a bit, one or the other will come out on top. I want to be on good terms with whoever does eventually come out of top, because so much money is involved. Now, all this is worrying, and it's something I think that needs to be brought out. Can I just say something again? It's not for me. I'm not bothered about the fact that Dr. Fauci is a Democrat. I'm not bothered about the fact that he's a liberal. I'm not bothered about the fact that he is perhaps somebody who may be on good terms with Hillary Clinton and Pelosi and all those sort of
Soros
and whatever. I mean, if we talk about someone else, Michael Horowitz, who's Inspector General of the FBI, and who's delivered a series of absolutely exemplary reports, is a Democrat and a liberal, and one assumes a critic of Donald Trump. But he understands what his role is. He's not there to play what are essentially political games. I don't think Fauci understands this or shows any concern for it. He clearly is, it seems to me, playing political games. He has lost sight of his role, which is to advise the president. That is all he's there for. The president can bring him forward. The president can have him at a press conference and say, here's Dr. Fauci, my leading expert, who will tell you X, Y, Z. But it's not, it seems to be, for Dr. Fauci to go around television studios promoting agendas, be they by Robert Kennedy Jr., be they by Bill Gates, be they by whomever. Agendas in which he has an interest, a financial interest, or a potential financial interest, and at the same time undermine the president. That's not his job. If he doesn't believe in what the president is doing, then he should not be part of his team. It is as simple as that.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, there's a lot to discover here with Fauci, and as I said, with Birx. Maybe we'll explore that in another video as well. We'll leave it there. Alexander Mercurius, editor-in-chief of the Durant. Thank you very much, guys. If you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Click on the notifications bell and smash that like button. Also, go to SoundCloud and iTunes to get an audio copy of this video. And please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donation really helps out this channel a lot. And go to the Durant Shop, pick up some merchandise, magic mugs, t-shirts, all kinds of good things. You have a magic mug right there in your hands, Alexander.
I certainly do. I would remind people. Well, I will say I don't. I'm not reminding people because. But this, today is Orthodox Easter Saturday. So in the evening, we will. I will be breaking my fast, and there will be champagne in this very mug that I'm holding now, because that's something that I will do when we end our fast after midnight. And what a fantastic mug to drink champagne from. You may not believe it, but mugs are really, well, these sort of mugs are really perfect for champagne. They actually keep it cooler for longer than glasses do, because of course the temptation with glasses is that you hold them with your hands, and that l lowers the temperature, whereas you want to keep your champagne chill. That's why wealthy aristocrats in England always used to drink champagne from mugs. So I just mentioned the fact you can try it one day with one of our magic mugs, and you will see how well it works and what magic mugs they are. Beautifully made, light, strong, extraordinarily elegant. This is, as I said, it's become my default one recently. It's got the double-headed eagle of the Russian Federation there. It's got a marvelous handle. It doesn't chip, crack, or break. I've had this one now for about a year and a half, roughly, and you can see in what perfect condition it is in. And as I would remind people, I said many times, I speak as the world expert on the subject of mugs, having gone through, I think, literally thousands of them since my teens. So you cannot get a better mug than you can get from us in the Durant. Alex and I, when we set up the shop, Alex took this decision that we were going to have really high quality items. This is an example of that. It's the best mug you will ever find, and all our viewers who buy them tell us the same. The same, of course, is equally true of our amazing shirts. You see this extraordinarily handsome polo shirt I'm wearing now, 100% cotton, incredibly comfortable, phenomenally stylish, the kind of shirt you wear on a hot day, if you like, when you're walking your dogs, or in the Alps, when you're walking in the Alps, or going to the après-ski. There are no better polo shirts than these. And each one of our shirts, polo shirts, has there embroidered on it the double-headed eagle of the Durand, which is, I would remind our viewers, different from the Russian one. You can see the contrast. And of course, we don't just have polo shirts. We have t-shirts, long-sleeved and short-sleeved. And we've also got V-neck shirts, all 100% cotton, all stylish and elegant and amazingly durable. And we also have hats, hoodies, and stickers. And we have ebooks, which we're going to start expanding our library of, the ebooks you can find in our shop. We at the moment got ebooks on things like Russiagate and Ukrainegate and Brexit and Epstein, but we will be adding much more to those. So you can help the Durand by buying these things from our shop. You can be the proud owner of these things, and you will be thrilled, I assure you, to have them. So don't hold back. Come to our shop, buy these great things, and Alex will tell you how.
You'll find the link to the Durand shop down below in the description box. Alexander Markers, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.